Welcome to Inside Stories. I'm Tequila.
I'm Jen, and here at Inside Stories, we listen to someone tell a story that they've told live somewhere, and then we talk about the story. So this week we have Dave Nelson with us, who has told many stories at the Moth and Madison Story Slam and all kinds of places. And I think we were talking about having you on like right before the pandemic started.
It was right a few weeks before, yeah. And then it hit, and we waited a couple of years.
Yeah.
So we took a little time off.
Yeah. So here we are, all the better for it, I'm sure. So thanks for joining us, and we're just going to listen to this story, and then we're going to talk about it.
Awesome, let's do it. All right, guys, I didn't know it as a kid, but now I'm really grateful to have grown up straight gay. Now, a lot of you don't know what straight gay is, because I made up the identity. That's when you're straight, but everybody in your high school thinks you're gay. And in the 80s, I took a lot of abuse for this. And where I got it worse was church. I had this church lady who would lean over to me, and she would say in front of the whole Sunday class a passage which she seemed to love. And it went like this: man shall not lay with a man the way they lay with a woman. But she wouldn't just say it. She would lean over, and she would look at me, and she would say, man shall not lay with a man the way they lay with a woman. Right, David? And I'm like, I take this at school, I'm taking it here. And finally I snapped. And I leaned over that table. And I said, you know, a man can't lay with a man the way they lay with a woman. One of them has to turn over. My God is a loving God. Those are instructions. And I got sent home from Sunday school. Proudly. But I go back to school, and the abuse, it's still there, right? Everybody knows it. And I don't get it. I had this kind of fashion sense. You know, a shirt and some pants. I had no witty rapport I thought you were supposed to have. And as my friend once told me, you're never once going to get a blowjob from somebody who really knows their way around a penis. None of the things you ought to get if you're gay. My wife hates that part of the story, as some of you do too. I'm not sure why she hates it. She just does hate that part of the story. But I took the abuse, and I started getting snappier and snappier about it, because I knew I was straight, and I was starting to care a lot less what other people thought. And that's when other people started coming up to me. And I met the Kids in Black. Anybody else here grow up in the 80s and meet the Kids in Black? They had hair in their eyes. They listened to The Cure. We danced to Erasure and Depeche Mode and New Order. And on Saturday nights, we went to the Rocky Horror Picture Show at midnight. And I met people who were lonely and weird and depressed and straight gay and all out gay. And we created a community together of friends. This was the 80s. So like, if we were worried about one person and we had to go get an AIDS test, we did it together. All of us. You would just get on the phone. You want to go? Yeah, we're going to go. And we would all go. And if somebody's getting picked on, we found friendship together. And this vulnerability, the worst thing you could be in a redneck town in the 80s, became a source of strength and independence in a way that I found a community of people who were so damn loving to me. And I'm so grateful for that. And I'm still friends with many of them today. So if this story gets out there, and if you're Tara, or you're David, or you're Matt, or you're Wendy, or you're Andre, or you're Katie, or a few other names, this is to you. Because not only did you make me have a great time in high school when it was going really bad, but I'm going to tell you how they made me into a better parent. So my daughter is 16 years old, and she's pansexual, which is like powerful bisexual. She's just, she could do whatever she wants. And God bless her, I'm grateful for her. And I told her that story about me in church and the man shall not lay with another man. And she says, yeah, because if a man and a man go straight at it, that's docking. I said, docking? What the hell is docking? And she said, Dad, that's a penis inside a penis. A penis in a penis? You can't do that. And so I immediately took this comfort that even though I want to support my daughter wherever she is on her journey and have her never feel bad for who she is, I was really happy she knows so little about penises. And then she says back to me, but of course, Dad, one of them has to have their foreskin so they can wrap around the other one for a little shake-shake action. And I thought, oh, my God. Number one, that sounds kind of awesome. But number two, my daughter knows more about penises than I do. She's got, like, instructions that we need to go back into that Bible and help everything out. How does she know that? But of course she knew that. Because I knew, and my wife knew, that from the very beginning, our daughters could be anything they wanted. And they could talk about it with us. And we could ask them questions. And they go to a school where they can be what they are, and they aren't ashamed. Because the people like me and our friends and the kids in black, we won. We won. The world is better. And it's going to be better. So I'm grateful for being straight gay. I'm grateful for the kids in black. I'm grateful for my daughter and the world that you and I are trying to create every day. Thank you.
That story is awesome. I know it probably makes people a little uncomfortable. I remember being in the audience hearing that story. And actually, I was on the first date with somebody, so it made him super uncomfortable. Mm. So thank you. He's no longer around.
How interesting that you were in the audience that night.
Yes, I was.
Which
I
way
was
did it make him uncomfortable? Uncomfortable that somebody was talking about sexuality in a positive way? Or like I might be saying something bad about people who were gay? Which way did it make
just his own uncomfortability with sexuality.
Okay.
So that's what that rooted out for me, like, super quickly and obviously because it was offensive. And it wasn't offensive. It was just offensive to his own insecurities.
Glad I could help.
Thank you. So thank you for that. But also, that is an amazing story now that I hear from this perspective of advocacy. Like, I think I'm going to use your story in many different ways because for a man to talk about sexuality in that way and gayness in that way. And yes, it was funny and maybe uncomfortable, but just the advocacy for your daughter and the community that you found with the kids in black. That's an excellent story of community and advocacy. I don't know if you meant it to be that way, but I think I did.
I'm not sure I knew I did, but okay. It kind of in there a little bit. Yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Well, I actually have a question about that. And this is sort of, I sometimes feel like I go a little too quickly to story creation, but I do have a question around that in terms of like what were you thinking? Because I think, you know, you're a talented storyteller, so I know you put thought into to it. And so, you know, you have this anecdote, I'm assuming, like the church woman saying, you know, man shall not lay with man is like a very vivid anecdote, right? And so you could decide where you're driving this story, and you drove it to this very positive, uplifting ending, right? And there's lots of places you could drive it. And so, I'd just love to hear more about that, like why you decided to take it that way. And
well, I knew I wanted people to laugh about something that was sad and uncomfortable, and that I wanted to make it positive, right? So I just had this basic idea that, and I also know that I'm willing to say things in front of audiences that most people couldn't say.
Right.
I'll get up there and talk about absolutely anything in front of as many people as I can find. So that's sort of my niche, is to find things that are funny, but also valuable, at least to me, and hopefully to somebody in the audience. So, I mean, the story with the church lady, it's true.
Right.
I don't know if I said it quite as well as I act like I said it.
Right.
Like, I probably said it more like a 13-year-old boy would say it. But that's how storytelling goes. You can address yourself up a little bit better.
Right.
So I knew I had that. I knew I had this gratitude for the friends who I found in high school. So this story is more of a patchwork than a simple narrative. So often in a story, the way you tell it is linearly, the time, right? So this happened, there was an inciting event, and then it peaked at this level. And then here's the, you'd like to have at the end of the story, like this turnaround, this unexpected piece, and this resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell a story just by, hey, this is the story, and you cut and edit things out to create a linear path. This is not a linear story. It doesn't really have a beginning, middle, and end, the way most stories do, because I'm jumping around in time. And I actually think that people in their own lives, realistically in stories, that's how we remember them. We don't remember, you know, this huge narrative. We have little blocks and pieces that come together. So it was just about saying, let's go back to that basic theme of what's your inciting event? The inciting event is this feeling I had. Everybody thought I was gay. And not everybody, but it was definitely the popular kids' opinion.
And the churches.
And the church's opinions. And then what is the thing where I begin to get my power in that? I get my power by speaking. I get my power by finding people like me and creating community. So it was more than just that linear path of the story. And it was, I'm going to take different pieces of my life and put them in that pattern of inciting event, peak, climax, tension, down to resolution. Right. So that's sort of how I did it. It was, you know, sometimes the story is really simple because you just tell it how it happened. This is one I had to piece together.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, at least for me, I mean, I liked this. I thought it was a great story. It worked really well. And I think, you know, partly why it works so well is I think you make yourself very vulnerable on a stage and mm-hmm. like you're very honest, but you're also funny. And so humor helps temper everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so because like when you start, you're like, okay, where is he going?
Oh, it's dangerous.
Yeah, I'm like, what's he so about?
What's this white straight dude going
to
do?
Exactly. You know, but, and I guess there could be people who listen to it and don't like it as much as I do. I don't know. But for me, I think it's because of both your vulnerability and honesty and humor that the whole thing just works, you know, because we can just sort of imagine you as a kid and see what you're going through and then like what you learned. And so anyway, it's definitely one of those, like, you know, which happens all the time at the Moth. I think anyway, where someone gets up, you're like, okay, what is about to happen?
Get your hook way to pull this creep off the stage.
Yeah, exactly. But we did not want to pull you off the stage.
No.
I actually think you won that night, I think.
I won that night.
Yeah.
And then after, more important than winning to me is the audience's reaction.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
You know, because who wins and who loses is sometimes random.
It's a whim of the judges.
It could go either way.
Well, and it's also like, how much have the judges had to drink? Where are you in the order?
If you're the last guy, you're going to win. The last woman, you're going to win.
Yeah.
It's easier to win. I go first all the time at the Moth, and I'm like, oh, but I just want to tell a story. And I want to hear that laugh.
Yeah.
I want to hear that groan.
Yep.
And as I leave the stage, I want to get some high fives.
Yep.
And then after, I want people to come up to me and ask me a question. So after that story, people from the LGBTQ+ community came up to me and thanked me for being a part of the community.
Right.
And I was like, oh, yes, that's great. But they also shared, this one woman shared that her and her friends just got tight and nervous when I stood up and said straight gay. They were holding their breath with a stomachache going on.
Yeah.
And I don't think I did that on purpose. But there is a design to telling stories to create tension and then relief. Right, so you create that tension and you leave, but I don't want to do that in a way that's triggering for anybody. So I don't think I did it on purpose, but it definitely happened. There was 20 seconds of, oh no, this cis white man's going to ruin the night.
Yeah,
And then like, no, all good. He's not. He's okay.
Right,
and then people relax.
Yeah, no, that I definitely experienced that as well.
I would say that's exactly what I felt as well. It's like, OMG, what's about to happen on stage? Somebody get ready. But then you just completely spin it around and you, like I said, talk about reclaiming your power and your voice and the community. And again, the details are all amazing for me, the kids in black, because no matter what high school you went to, you had the group of kids in black and we passed judgment or we avoided them, but you embraced them and showed how they just really made your time like amazing and healing and wonderful. Can you tell me about what it was like writing that, looking back, like what healing took place or what things you unpacked as you kind of went back and looked at this time frame in your life?
Well, you know, a story can only take a sliver of who you are. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I was not only, I have a voice like I still do, right? I still have a voice that will make a guy look at me funny, a mean guy. And I have a way of talking that most men don't talk with. And so that pointed me out. I was also dealing with pretty strong mental illness, depression, anxiety, OCD, ADHD. What else did I have? Probably a few other things. Dyslexia. So I'm having trouble with my classes. My brain was just wired in really hard ways. And so not only did these kids accept me for what might be seen as gender violations in the 1980s from the gender police. They also accepted me in terms of this kid who would get panic attacks. This kid who would do strange things because of his OCD. I would walk in strange ways. I would touch things in strange ways. I had all these, they'd call them superstitions. Mm. But we were all weird and our own ways and thought that made us in some ways better. So if you went to class and you felt like you had to be quiet because you might be judged, or if you cut class because you didn't want to put up with that, you'd find these other kids, you know, exactly where they were, mm-hmm. you know, exactly where they hung out, smoking their closed cigarettes where nobody could see them, and I could find them, right? And then we could go to parties together. And I think that's true of most outside groups, is that you end up seeing yourself as an other for a long time, and then you find who you are.
Right.
Right? I think that could be the case of somebody, you know, if you were black going to all white school, mm-hmm. you'll probably strong black communities within that predominantly white school. If you're gay, if you're whatever you are, and you feel like you're a smaller group of the majority, even if they're being kind to you, even if you're not feeling abused, there's probably microaggressions or just not being understood and all kinds of things that when you find people who are like you, you kind of like your shoulders go down, you breathe easier, mm-hmm. and you don't, you know, it's like your home. It's like your home. And so those kids were my home growing up. And, you know, I'm still close to a lot of them.
Oh, that's awesome. And one of the other things that struck me, too, that you did really well, and you just hit on it, is, you know, you wouldn't think that judgment and that outsiderness would be existent for a cis white dude, right? So yeah. We'd see you on stage, it's like, you don't even know anything. What do you know? But then you'd chronicle us through that whole feeling like an outsider. And again, with the connections and details, church, we all have religious trauma. So I love how you threw that in there, because I could imagine the church lady leaning over saying that to you in a snarky way, but in a loving, praise God kind of way. Yeah.
And let me be clear, I get my privilege, right? So I'm getting up there and I'm telling my experience, but identity is intersectional.
Yes.
So if I had gone through this and been poor, if I had gone through this and been a person of color, that would not have gone through the filter of my privilege, which made it easier for me, mm-hmm. right? So I don't want to pretend that, oh, Dave Nelson had it so bad as a kid. No, I mean, I had some shit that I went through, but my privilege was there the whole time. So I don't want to pretend to be some subjugated person. I wasn't. I get it. I get that people could feel that way about a cis white guy standing on stage, and they're right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean my story is not valuable to be told, but I got to get it. They're right. Yes.
Right. Because, I mean, I think anyone who was bullied, you know, in your childhood, like, irregardless of anything, that's very foundational, you know, that mm-hmm. you sort of carry that with you, no matter what else is going well or going poorly for you.
You fight your first trauma for the rest of your life.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. I feel like I should write that down.
Yes. It was recorded. It will be good.
I'm not sure I came up with it, yeah. but it's true.
Yeah. Yes. I'm going to pivot to a little bit of a lighter note for a second, because I think we're roughly the same age. I also was a teenager in the 80s, and I loved your bringing up the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Is that something you did, Tequila?
I've seen it, but I didn't get to go to the Rocky Horror Picture
Show. Yeah, so I don't know if that was like an age thing or a white thing, but like that, that was a big part of my life. Like, you show up with props. Like, you come, like, mm-hmm. you have to come with... You know, you come with like the bread you're going to throw. You come with the newspaper. Yep. Like, you have like, it's like this, like, anyway, it was quite an experience. I hadn't thought about it in a very, very long time, but those were some fun.
Oh, absolutely. And then the party kept going afterwards. Yep. Like, you went somewhere and, you know, we had this district called the Tower District. It was downtown. So if you were, that's where we all hung out. Like, we had to go to the Tower District. You had to go see the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and you'd be with friends and people like you. And that show is awesome. And it is probably a very, middle class white kid in the 80s experience.
Yeah, I mean, I was that, so I don't know. Like, you know, but it was I mean, it's truly like you come with like bologna sandwiches that you throw at the screen, and you have like
you come costumed, right?
I never did. You pull it when it starts raining, everyone puts up an umbrella. Like, it's just like, it's just a crazy thing.
So I think you two should be in charge of bringing this back for one night only.
Oh, they still do it downtown. They do. What? You can go to downtown.
They do?
Yeah, they do it. The Majestic has had it a few times.
Oh, Majestic makes sense. That would fit in well there. Oh, and now Kevin Wilmot runs the Majestic. I'm going to ask him about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he doesn't run the, whatever. He manages the bookings. I don't know what he does. He has a nice job there. I don't want to overspeak or underspeak what he does.
He's the owner. Kevin.
He owns it. No, I don't know. Should we move on to our questions?
I have one other question, because you mentioned both your wife and daughter, especially your wife. and her reactions to you telling the story.
Well, no, not the story. That one part of the story.
I would never get a blowjob if somebody knew what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah. No, that the very specific part.
That very specific part.
Yeah.
And because we had in a workshop earlier where someone was asking about details and stories, can you tell us about, like, you know, which ones? Because you probably could have said you're witty and funny. You probably could have came up with plenty of other lines. But those details that you put in that are making people a little uncomfortable, that made your wife uncomfortable, how did you settle on those ones versus to go, you know, either toward the left or more safer?
So I write a lot, right? And so what I'll do is I'll write a story. And then sometimes I won't have a funny thing. So I'll say insert joke.
Okay.
Right. So there'll be the story laid out. I'll say insert joke, and then I'll think of everything, you know. And this is where storytelling is different than comedy, because in comedy you just lie, right? Stand up, you just make something out. Like I often say that storytelling is a lie told with facts, and comedy is the truth told with lies. And in storytelling, you know, you kind of go through and you tell the story, you leave out the parts that make you look bad.
Right.
And you tell this construct, but it's not exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And in comedy, you're really trying to get at what's the soul, what's the nugget, what's the piece of things that rings true with people and will make them laugh and feel a certain way, regardless if it's true. Right. But in storytelling, you got to do both. You got to somehow be the truthful. The facts have to be right, and the overall meaning of where you want people to go has to hit them in their soul in a certain way.
Ooh, I like that.
So you write out as many things as you can think of, and then I say them out loud. So I write. And then I say it out loud. And then this bit here, also some of this is in my stand-up that I do. So I have been in, you do an open mic, and the storytelling you tell once. Comedy, you tell 100 times before you get it right in front of audiences. And so some of the lines in here are lines that I've also used in my stand-up. Oh. And so I've seen what works and what bombs, what makes people funny. And I didn't tell that, when you listen to that line, it's not told as well as I've told it before. I kind of got excited and went too fast in the story. It's funnier in some of my stand-up. Because I'm not having to keep it going as a story. I can just punch it in a certain way. But that's what I do. I write it out, and then I just try funnier lines. And then if it's storytelling, you do it one time, and that's it, at the Moth. You can then find other places to do it as well.
Right.
But in stand-up, you go up and you try it again, and you go and try it again, and you go up and you try it again, and you learn what makes people laugh. And you got to bomb a couple times.
That's true. You got to bomb a lot, especially in writing. You got to write some sucky stuff before you get to the good stuff.
You got to write your sloppy copy and then take a look.
Well, and then I think the other thing about it's like a 5 or 6 minute story is like there might be a part of it. So like maybe some people are like, oh, I don't know why he said that. Now we're totally enjoying this next thing he said. So like it doesn't, not every part of it has to be perfect is what I mean in a story.
Yeah. I think that's right. And in storytelling, the audience has certain expectations. And I do like to violate those expectations.
I thought you were going to say I like to meet them, but no, okay,
I like to violate them. Well, so they think the things that you don't think you're going to say at a Moth story slam.
Well, but the thing that I think you do very well, which is, and this is something I often say when people ask me, like, you know, how should I be when I tell a story or whatever, is that I actually think an audience responds more to how the storyteller feels about telling the story than the story itself.
That's probably right.
And so when you're up there, like, first of all, you sure look like you're having a great time. Like you very much like everything you're saying, and you're just having fun. You know, and you're having fun. And you have this positive energy, and you're funny, and you like your jokes, and so that goes a long way. And so I think that's one rule you don't violate. Is like,
I think there's a bunch of rules you don't violate. You don't say anything mean. You don't. Mm-hmm. You don't jab down, right? So you don't hurt people. You tell the truth. You're right. But that idea of enjoy yourself and don't be mean.
Yeah.
Right. If you could just stick within that, you're going to be pretty fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we all have dirt that we can throw in our stories and hurt people. But you know, we got to be tactful and gentle and funny or not. But I like that. You don't have to jab down.
Yeah. Don't hurt anybody down. You know, you can attack the patriarchy. You can attack the president. You can attack any power, but don't hit people where they're vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody should go away sadder because of you.
Well, right? And I also think like, you know, because some people might have sort of hard things they're talking about, either about themselves or other people in their family. And so I think if you're going to do that, you have to invest early in how you introduce yourself. Like, people need to sort of be on your side or on this person's side before you start getting into stuff, you know. So, but
yeah, maybe I didn't do that in this story, though. Maybe I'm starting out straight gay. I kind of didn't, and then I brought it back.
But you weren't that kind of story. You weren't going on about anything difficult about okay. other people. No, anyway, yeah. That was just maybe an aside I shouldn't have had. And if only Richard would let us, like, cut things, we could cut this.
He's not cutting anything.
No, I think it's good. Yeah, I think that that's right. And the other bit of truth is that, for me, is that I'm the one being made fun of. Like, if there's a joke, it's about me. And it's personalized. And so if you get up there and you're telling jokes about yourself, how you felt, somebody who feels that way too about themselves is going to also have a kinship that you're talking about yourself, and I maybe feel a connection with you, so I'm not going to feel as triggered, perhaps. Yeah,
that's
I don't
a good
know.
Point. Yep.
No, I agree with that. I also think that an advantage you have, and like anyone who's funny has, is when you make the audience laugh early on, we're on your side, right? Mm. We all like to laugh, you know? Yeah. So it's like, okay, that we, you know, we're giving you the benefit of the doubt now, you know, because you made us laugh early.
Maybe.
Yeah. Should we?
Yeah, I have a serious question for you because you're a funny guy and you said you do stand up. Was there anything that you learned about yourself during this pandemic that kind of enriched you, made you a better human being, besides how to land a punchline?
Stop drinking.
Congratulations.
Really?
Yeah. So I have a lot of mental health issues, and I'm not an alcoholic, but I'm one hell of a self-medicator.
Yeah.
Right? Terrible anxiety at night, and went through a process of being drunk repeatedly in the last 5 or 6 years. And, I'll still have a drink if I go out, but it'll just be one. And I'm doing better about that. So I think getting myself off of alcohol as a crutch was an important thing over the year. I have a 22-year-old and an 18-year-old daughter now, and so we spent a year and a half in a house together. And while there were times where I'm sure they plotted my death, it's also this memory that I'm going to have forever.
Yeah, for sure.
A time when a lot of young people pull away from their parents. We were each other's best friends. And their friendships were more virtual at this time, right, rather than seeing people. So they had to be my friend. there were times where I know they wanted me far away. But I couldn't go far away. I could just go in the other room. So I think there is a stronger connection that my family and I, my wife, my two daughters, dog and cat, will have these memories of us always being together. And that'll get cleaned up over their years so that they forget all the times I was so damn annoying.
Right. That's awesome. That's good. Yeah. That's nice to hear. I have a little bit more of a lighter question, yeah. Which is what was a sort of guilty pleasure of yours that you did during the pandemic, that little crutch that got you through?
Mm. So I guess I gave up on my guiltiest pleasure, which was drinking. Not wearing pants, just wearing the soft pants instead of hard pants.
Yep.
Doing my Zoom meetings in a nice shirt and wearing, lounge pants under. I think the other piece, getting up late.
Yeah,
waking up 5 minutes before my first Zoom call, or it just bam, go get brush your teeth, comb your hair, sit down at the front of the computer, have your call, but none of that prep time, no commute, the ability to walk over and give your kid a hug or play with your dog in between meetings. There's a lot of, I haven't really thought about it, but there's a lot of little things in there that were nice.
I think you're maybe like the first person we've asked that didn't have like TV watching, YouTube watching. So
oh, we did that too. I didn't think of it.
No. Well, I like that you went to like the guilty pleasure was you got to have extra hugs and that's really nice.
That is. But no, but my wife and I did sit down and we watched the Detectorists and all kinds of shows that we probably wouldn't have seen you know, Schitt's Creek and other great shows that we got to sit down and watch, and we wouldn't have made that time. And that's kind of like a tradition we're still doing. We're still watching shows together now, and we weren't doing that before the pandemic. So that's another thing, like everybody else.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I'm very glad we had a chance to talk to you about your stories. You know, I think there was like three or four I was trying to decide between, and you were like, I want to do this one. So I'm glad we landed on this one.
It was either this or the pig story, which I think anybody who has the spiral ham story, which we stayed
off. No. Well, Richard wanted the spiral ham story, actually, which we'll just leave that as a mystery for everyone else.
Well, but Google it. Go on the YouTube and look for it. You can find it.
Oh, really? Can you?
I think it's up there.
Yeah. Okay. I would do that. Dave Nelson.
Dave Nelson or Dave Emanuel, whichever name I'm using at the time. Spiral ham.
No, I was the one, the OCD one where you got into the fight was the one.
That was the first story I ever told at a slam.
Yeah. But we shouldn't go on about those because people won't. I don't think you can Google that one, but Google the spiral ham.
Yeah.
But, you know, brace yourself. Let me just say.
Brace yourself. And this was a perfect story, too, because it's LGBTQ History Month. So added that in there for a little advocacy. And I love it. Thank you for coming on today and sharing.
You guys are awesome. I'm glad we got to do this a year and a half later.
Yeah. Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Well, I am glad we had that story on, even though, as Langston would say, it was cringy, but it's a really good one.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to hear Dave talk about how he puts together stories, because it's clear that he thinks hard about like where the comedy goes and you know how he sort of puts the story arc. So I enjoyed hearing him talk about that.
And I always really appreciate when storytellers really talk about the craft and the work that they put into it, not just telling a story or just throwing things out there, but really get into the, like you said, the mechanics of it and why it's important to them. So like you said, if they're on stage enjoying themselves, we will too.
Yeah, and it's interesting because so we had Dave and then a couple podcasts ago, we had Esteban and Cynthia. So we had three comics. And so I think they each have different ways they sort of weave comedy into the story. So it was interesting that he like literally puts like insert joke here, but then he sort of runs through his repertoire of jokes to figure out which one fits. So that was kind of interesting.
That's a really good writing tip. Just to asterisk and insert blah, blah, blah here.
Insert smart thought, you know, insert something meaningful. All right. So I think that's it. We don't have any workshops coming up. But we're sort of back on the workshops. We've been doing a bunch of them. So if you're interested in learning more about what our storytelling workshops are like or what they entail, you could contact us at
insidestoriespodcast@gmail.com.
I could change the name, actually.
No, that's too much work.
Yeah, okay. It's a long name.
It's a long name. We'll just have to remember it, and that's all.
So I don't think we have anything coming up. If you're new to this podcast, if you're a fan of Dave's, so you're checking us out for the first time, why don't you subscribe, go back and listen to some other ones. You know, the two that were recent, Esteban and Cynthia, if you like comedians who are storytellers, check out their stories.
Mm-hmm. And again, if you are looking to hone your craft, I will be, happy to say now, Jen and I, are great at training actresses. It's the art of storytelling.
Oh yeah, we did the workshop we did at the Chazen, the museum. We had two actresses
and an aspiring actress.
Two and aspiring, yeah. So yeah, that was fun. We don't yet know how their stories are going to turn out, but I'm assuming there'll be some good performance to it. Yeah,
but it's just a nice reminder of how storytelling can connect to all different things. So your advocacy work, your regular life, if you want to be an actress, comedian, whatever. So just another little marketing plug. See, I'm getting better already. Book us for a workshop.
And as always, I want to thank Richard, Oddly Arranged Media. Oddly Arranged Studio.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah. I know I should know that. I do blame everything on the pandemic that my attention span is not what it once was.
And the memory, Lord, I just, what day is it? What time is it?
Yeah. Who knows? I think that's it.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we'll be back maybe next week.
Maybe. I hope so. Thank y'all. Have a good life.